It's our pleasure today to be talking with Stephanie Steiner. Stephanie is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the Iowa's 4th District of the United States House of Representatives. Steiner, 43, lives on an acreage outside of Sutherland, Iowa, with her husband, 3 youngest children, and a herd of goats. She worked in women's health care for Mercy Medical Center in Sioux City before hitting the road as a traveling nurse for several years before becoming a stay-at-home mom. Steiner's younger children's father passed away suddenly from COPD in 2019 after losing access to medications. That and her experience in the healthcare field drives her passion for protecting access to healthcare. If you've ever felt ignored, pushed aside, or underestimated, you're the person she says she's campaigning for. She's a stay-at-home mom, more purple than blue or red, and running for federal office. In the primary election, you've got to pick a side, so she picked the Democratic side because she wants to represent everybody, including people of color and the LGBTQ+ community. She wants people to be respectful of everyone as they have the same rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Stephanie, tell our listeners something about yourself they won't find on your website or with a search engine.
All right. Thank you for having me here today. Well, something that you may not know because it's not out there. I have 2 older sisters, so I'm the youngest of 3 children. I was, of course, born in Athens, Alabama, but both of my sisters were involved in a car accident when I was 10 years old. My oldest sister was the driver of that car and the only one wearing a seatbelt. As a result of that car accident, the 15-year-old best friend of my 15-year-old sister was killed. And my middle sister, Brandy, suffered what's known as a counter-acute head injury and spent 3 months in a coma. And when she woke up, my family got handed a 12-year-old infant. She had to learn how to walk and talk. And we had to teach her how to eat again. So, you know, that day was very tragic for my entire family. It really changed the trajectory of my life. It is something that drives my passion to protect people with disabilities and to not underestimate people. My sister was not expected to live. My parents were begged numerous times by doctors to take her off life support, but they chose not to, and she fought, and our family fought, and we made it through.
You've been traveling around the district, I imagine, and as you talk with people, what are their most frequent concerns?
The number one concern I hear is about healthcare. People are concerned about what they're going to do if they lose access to their ACA subsidies, if their children who have disabilities and require extensive services, if they get kicked off Medicaid. So that's one of the number one things I hear. And the second thing, of course, is the economy. People are super worried because they're struggling to pay their bills. Their wages haven't kept up. It's not a lot of job opportunities. I'm starting to hear a lot from the farmers because they're in a really tight spot. They've got crops that they got nowhere to go with. They have no free market. And they say they don't want handouts and bailouts. They want free markets. So I would say those 3 things, followed, of course, by civil rights and civil liberties. People are not happy with the violation of our Constitution and what appears to be the destruction of our democracy. So those are some of the biggest things that I hear over and over and over again.
Well, having heard all of those, let's assume you're elected. What are your top priorities and what specific actions will you take?
Well, number one priority, I think we need a single-payer universal healthcare system. And they try to make this out like it's a big deal, but it's really not. Thanks to Medicare and Medicaid, we already have that infrastructure and computer charting, so it's all there. So we have that, number one. Number two, real simple. How we do that, how we accomplish that, how we pay for it is we tax the only minority that's the actual problem in this country, and that's the top 1%. You know, the top wage earners right now lose 23% of their income to taxes, while people like Elon Musk at times have paid $0 in federal taxes. I think that top 1% needs to pay their 23% before they get one tax break, one loophole, and there would be plenty of money then to fund that universal health care system. Then we use the government's bargaining power to lower drug cost, to lower supply cost, to negotiate those things, make sure that our doctors get paid, our nurses get paid, and everybody gets high-quality health care when they need it and as they deserve it, because it should be a human right, not a privilege of the wealthy.
Well, that's a place where we run up against what's so prevalent in today's political environment, and that is the amount of money that's floating around. What, if anything, would you do to change that environment and limit the amount of money in politics today?
Well, I think we need to overturn Citizens United. We don't need to be buying and paying for our politicians. Right now, we've only got about 2% of our House representatives that come from working class Americans. So we don't really have a real good representation of everyday people. So if we want to change the way things are, then we got to change the people that we elect into those positions, which is one of the reasons I'm running. I'm not a politician. I'm not someone who's rich. I'm just an everyday person. So we need to make sure that we are voting for term limits. We need to cap campaign finances. I was told when I started running for this seat, if I wanted to win it, it was going to cost me $15 to $20 million. Do you know how many people that would feed? How many people could have a higher income to win a public service seat? This is public service, meaning we are supposed to serve the public, not the public serving us. And when you got that kind of money, that's what you're doing. You're buying and paying for politicians, and what you see is the result of that. If you want to change it, you got to change the people we put there.
There are a number of issues here in the state that affect people day to day, and you've already mentioned health care and what you might do for that. One of the issues is immigration.
Right.
And we seem to be in an environment that's pushing immigrants away.
Right.
What would you do about immigration reform?
Well, I think we need sensible immigration reform. Right now, we're spending billions of dollars in CBP and ICE officers that are going out there and terrorizing our communities, violating our civil liberties, violating our Constitution. That needs to stop. Instead of funneling all of that money to track down hospitality workers and our farm workers, what we need to do is take that money and put it into our immigration system. Idea, how about we increase the number of federal immigration judges so we can get through these backlogs of people? Nobody wants to sit around worried and afraid if their asylum case or their immigration case is going to get through or immigration is going to show up and get them. So let's fund that money, increase immigration judges, get through the backlog. We don't need to be charging people an arm and a leg. The thing people need to realize is this. Immigrants, migrants in this country, pay about $85 billion a year into our tax system. So when people say, well, they're freeloading, they're not getting, you know, they're just living here and they're not doing anything, that is a load of, and I'll watch my language because we're on air, but it's just not true. Migrants, they contribute so much to our country. I mean, at some level, almost all of us are the descendants of immigrants, of migrants. You know, our ancestors migrated here to get away from a tyrant king, right? So I think we need to increase federal immigration judges, get through the backlog. We need to make the process for citizenship simpler. And that way people, if they're given a legal option, so if they got a legal option or they got an option to pay a coyote or a human smuggler to try to get them across the border and then live in fear, they're going to take the legal option way. And then you know what that does? That frees up CBP and ICE to keep track of our borders for the people that wouldn't qualify. So then they could do their job to keep the people out that shouldn't be here, but not terrorize the people that helped build this country and have helped keep this country going. So I absolutely disagree with current policy, and it needs to stop, period.
Another issue that's current and has been dividing people for some time is a woman's right to her own body, and I assume you have a position there.
Yes, I do. Here's my position on that. It's called medical privacy. Okay? Physicians in this nation go to school for many years, sometimes decades by the time they do their residencies, and we trust these doctors with our lives. If you show up in a hospital and you're having a heart attack, nobody questions that doctor's decision to save your life. So we do not need the government or your neighbor or your church or anybody else in an exam room between a patient and their doctor. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, old or young or what your race is, every person is entitled to medical privacy. We need to trust doctors to do what they're trained to do. And then between the patient and their care team, they can make decisions on what's in their best interest. Because here's the thing, you know, medical privacy is important for everybody. What if the government stepped in to tell someone what cancer treatment they could have or not, right? So it's a slippery slope. And at the end of the day, the government is not trained in medical decisions. Medical care teams are. And we need to let them do their jobs.
Another issue that divides folks, especially in this corner of the state, are guns and
yep.
gun control.
Yes.
Is there a sensible way to have gun control, or is that an issue at all?
Well, here's the thing. You know, with all the gun violence that's going on, there needs to be some sensible gun law reforms. I mean, it is my stance and my position that if you've been convicted of a felony or a violent crime, shouldn't have access to a weapon. If you're currently under investigation, or have been charged with, or have been convicted of domestic violence or stalking, you should not have or be able to have possession of a firearm. If it's determined that due to a mental status issue, whether that's mental health disease or acute, long-term, if it's determined in those situations that a person may be a harm to themselves or others, then those people should also be restricted from firearms. Now, until there's a ruling differently on the Second Amendment, which gives people the right to bear arms, there's not a whole lot I think we can do, although we should always be working towards sensible solutions, period. So I'm not going to say I have all the answers, but I am willing to work towards any type of sensible solution. But those things I just mentioned, those should be a full stop no. Those people should never have access to weapons.
Many of the people you wish to represent aren't making much money.
Right.
And they're holding down full-time jobs and still not making much money. Should we have a minimum wage at the state and national level?
Yes. I think the minimum wage needs to be raised to at least $15 an hour. Federal and state level. Here's the thing, you know, when people can't afford to buy stuff, then the money doesn't go back into the economy. And when there's no money in the economy, then there's no money to pay workers. So it's a cycle. Trickle-down economics doesn't work real well. So the other thing about that comes back to our taxation system. We need to relax strapping our federal and state taxes onto the working class. And again, we need to shift that to that top 1%. People that can afford to pay more but are paying none. So I think we need to raise the minimum wage, and I think that we need to change the federal and state tax structure to take it off of hardworking, everyday people.
How are you going to win the general election?
How am I going to win the general election? Honesty and transparency.
Well, Stephanie, thank you very much for sharing yourself with our listeners today. You've been listening to Stephanie Steiner, who's a candidate for the Democratic Party nomination for the 4th District of the U.S. House of Representatives.